Hey guys, welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of Chapter 7 from the ACE Personal Trainer Manual. My name is Eddie Lester, here to take you through this fun chapter today. We finally get to get into things that are directly relevant to the field of personal training as far as the actual stuff that you'll be doing with clients regarding movement. And specifically, this chapter is going to be focusing on functional assessments, specifically around things like flexibility, balance, core, posture and movement. And as we look to page 150, the left-hand column of that page is going to kind of explain which of these assessments we're going to be going over. And I want to specifically just say before we get into this that I'm going to be focusing on or a good amount of time on the assessments that are most important to the test, as well as what's most important to the field of personal training. So some I may skip through kind of quick. If you do have interest in those, you can read into those a little bit further. But I'm going to give all my opinions on each of these assessments, as well as point out what's most important to know for the test around each of these assessments. Okay, so let's go ahead and start as we look over to page 150 and just talk about their intro to, we'll say, they say sequencing a client's assessments. Basically, once again, you start off with all the paperwork. From the earlier chapters, we learned about the PAR-Q, you learned about the health history questionnaire, the lifestyle questionnaire, motivational interviewing, all that stuff that kind of sets them up to then begin movement. And also it clears them to make sure that they're, we'll say, in good enough health to perform assessments and movement. Remember, if they do need a doctor's note, you would want that before you begin all of these functional assessments. That's determined by the health history questionnaire and PAR-Q. All right, so basically what's gonna be the goals of the client? In my opinion, and I'm sure ACE agrees, whatever the client's goals are the assessments that you're going to choose that are most relevant to those goals. Okay. Specifically, if someone is an athlete that plays tennis, you're going to choose assessments that are all based around, we'll say, not only the tennis performance, but also maybe factors that might influence athletic performance in tennis. You know, flexibility, balance, side-to-side movement, even core strength, posture. Maybe it may affect that. But choose the ones that are most relevant to each goal that your client has. If your client just does basic activities of daily living and doesn't really do any performance-based stuff, you can get away with doing any of these, but make sure that they're relevant to their goals. If it's weight loss, you definitely want to be doing things that matter towards that. Like, you wouldn't need to do too much around, we'll say, a balance training assessment if their main goal is just to kind of lose weight. Obviously, you know, but there's benefit to doing that, but keep in mind that the balance training isn't, we'll say, a main part of body fat loss, even though it can be. But all right, moving along, as we look over to page 151, we're going to start off with the static postural assessments. And the static postural assessments are going to be non-moving assessments, meaning you're just looking at the person's posture. And table 7-1, 7-2, and 7-3 talk about the kind of main things that you're looking for in the static postural assessments. And specifically, they're talking about the main, we'll say, postural deviations that you'll locate in the static assessments. And prior to getting into that, when we talk about static posture and postural muscles, I do want to point out on page 151 that the type 1 muscle fibers up there on that top paragraph, type 1 muscle fibers are going to be what primarily make up the postural muscles. And because they perform isometrics constantly. For instance, in your seat right now, just to sit upright, you have a lot of muscle activation in those type 1 fibers of your postural muscles. And of your postural muscles, and those are type 1 muscle fibers. So just keep that in mind. Might be something to highlight. But yeah, they do ask questions on the type 1 and type 2 muscle fibers. And postural muscles are type 1. Know that. All right, table 7-1. Let's talk about it really quick. Kyphosis lordosis posture. All right, so what can be tight or shortened or hypertonic? And what can be lengthened, weak, or inhibited? I throw tight and weak in there because your clients are going to understand what tight means over shortened, most likely, or hypertonic, obviously. So, and also weak because your clients will understand weak more than they would inhibited. So What's going to be tight with when we're referring to kyphosis lordosis, lordosis posture? I don't know why I want to say the SH there on lordosis, but probably something to do with Mary Poppins. All right, anyways, hip flexors are tight. Lumbar extensors are tight. Anterior chest muscles are tight. Latissimus dorsi and neck extensors are tight. So kyphosis specifically is referring to rounding of the upper back. And when they say associated with kyphosis lordosis posture, you're basically referring to the excessive curvature of the thoracic spine and excessive curvature of the lumbar spine. Okay, so it's basically an anterior pelvic tilt and also a rounded shoulders posture, kind of a rounded upper spine posture. Typically, in my opinion, you should break those down because most of the time people don't have both of those at once. At least I haven't seen that before. So yeah, you'd really refer to someone with excessive kyphosis, which is the rounding of the upper spine, or someone with lordosis, which is the excessive arch in the low back. But just know what muscles are going to be tight associated with this muscle imbalance. And actually, I think we're going to get into that a little bit further. And maybe not. But hip flexors, so anterior pelvic tilt. Actually, they do get into that one further on, so I won't do that. And the rounded shoulders forward head position, which is the kyphosis posture. Definitely the neck extensors, latissimus dorsi, and anterior chest muscles are tight. And then the hip flexors and lumbar extensors are more tight when you have the lordosis posture. Yeah, so if you wanted to break those three up, the bottom three on the tight are going to be associated with kyphosis, rounded shoulders posture. The top two, hip flexors and lumbar extensors, are going to be tight with the lordosis posture. And inhibited hip extensors, so that's your gluteus maximus, and hamstrings are hip extensors. Hip flexors, if you weren't aware, the hip flexors are going to be the rectus femoris and psoas group, muscle group. And then you also have your, for it lengthened or inhibited, you have your external obliques. That's for the lordosis, and then the upper back scapular stabilizers and neck flexors are going to be for the kyphosis posture. Those are weak. So I would rather have you break those up because they just kind of grouped them together, which is kind of weird, as those typically don't run together in the human body. All right, then table 7-2, muscle imbalance associated with flat back posture. Really, guys, flat back posture isn't too common. Or isn't as common as the top. You can kind of just look through those, see what's tight, see what's weak. And if you have someone with flat back posture, which they will show on the next page, you can refer to that chart. It's table 7-3, muscle imbalances associated with sway back posture. Sway back posture is just going to be that kind of, we'll say, pelvis is tucked extra underneath, which just looks like they don't have a butt. I guess that's the way I'd describe it. As opposed to anterior pelvic tilt or the excessive lumbar lordosis is where they look like they have an extra butt, which high heels puts most people, females typically, in the position of an anterior pelvic tilt, which creates a little extra arch in the low back and makes their butt stick out more, which society has determined is more sexy. Well, we don't need to get into that, but... also though, yeah, high heels shorten the calf muscles, create that anterior pelvic tilt. Posturally, just understand that high heels are probably not the best for posture. I guess that's what I should focus on and not talk about, sex appeal. All right, moving over to page 152, we're going to talk about the static posture in the sense of each of the, imbalances that you might see in a static postural assessment. Starting from the left on figure 7-2, page 152 again, lordosis, okay? Excessive lumbar lordosis, or arch in the low back, excessive low back arch, is going to be basically where the pelvis is tilted forward, anterior pelvic tilt, you may hear it as. And increased anterior lumbar curve from neutral. Hip flexors are tight, okay? That's the rectus femoris and... rectus femoris and psoas muscle group, iliopsoas, you may have it referred to. So I do want you to write that next to those because that one typically is a test question to know what muscles are tight for the lumbar lordosis posture, which we will get into further down the road, but I want you to write it there as well. What's weak with that? You have the gluteus maximus and Yeah, glutes are the main one for sure. And hamstrings might be a little bit weak in that too. All right, B, kyphosis. Kyphosis is going to be that excessive rounding of the upper back. Okay, rounding of the upper back. And that's going to be an increased posterior thoracic curve from neutral, meaning that the thoracic spine has an increased curve, and that's a rounding of the upper back. And yeah, so basically the way that I want you to define kyphosis is an increased flexion of the upper back. I want you to write that right next to that kyphosis posture. Muscles that are commonly tight are going to be the pec major, latissimus dorsi, anterior deltoid. Weak muscles are the rhomboids and the middle and lower traps on those, and maybe posterior deltoid if you wanted to write that too. Yeah, so once again, kyphosis, write this down, is, and highlight kyphosis, is increased flexion of the upper back. Tight muscles are anterior deltoids, pec major, and latissimus dorsi. Weak muscles are going to be the rhomboids, middle, and lower trapezius muscle. All right, so flat back, once again, not commonly seen, but it's basically your pelvis is tucked. It says a decreased anterior lumbar curve. Remember, guys, any of these postures that are not neutral postures are basically going to be not healthy for the spine. So that's why they want to point these out so that you can address these and fix them. But yeah, the flat back is just decreased anterior lumbar curve. Nothing too special there. Sway back, okay, that's going to be the decreased anterior lumbar curve and increased posterior thoracic curve. So that's a double one. And then scoliosis, I do want you to know, is going to be the scoliosis is a side or a lateral spinal curvature. Highlight that. That's E on top of page 152. And it's often accompanied by vertebral rotation. But notice how that the spine makes like an S, the S for scoliosis. And that's a lateral spinal curvature. Highlight that. And with scoliosis, it's typically a structural issue and not something that can be fixed. Some chiropractors address it, some we'll say medical professionals can address it, but the scoliosis typically is not something that you would deal with. And if somebody has scoliosis, you would definitely want a medical release. All right, cool. So that's kind of the main posture or static postural assessment imbalances that you'll be looking for. And we'll get into maybe one or two more as we get down further. But let's hop on over to top of page 153 and talk about the key concept. So there are going to be deviations that can be correctable and some that cannot be correctable. Okay, so let's go over these. I want you to highlight some of these and I'll let you know which ones. But yeah, so it says muscle imbalances and postural deviations can be correctable or non-correctable. So some correctable ways, and this is the main one that I want you to know, are repetitive movements. So throughout life, people do the same thing over and over and over typically, especially when they get beyond or into their career stage in which they're sitting a lot or they're doing a repetitive movement like a construction worker would, or if they're an athlete and they do the same sport without much cross training, they would do the same movements over and over. Those repetitive movements can cause muscle imbalances. That is a correctable factor. Highlight that, correctable factor, repetitive movements. And it's basically also known as muscular pattern overload, meaning that you use the same muscle too frequently and that causes the muscle to be overactive or tight. And that can be corrected though by foam rolling and stretching to loosen that muscle up. Okay, that's the main one I want you to know. Otherwise, the non-correctable factors are definitely like, structural issues, congenital conditions, it says, scoliosis, arthritis, okay? Yes, with structural deviations I already mentioned, and any sort of trauma, like broken bones, fused vertebrae, stuff like that is not obviously not correctable. But definitely know the correctable factors. Some other ones might be lack of mobility or stability, things like that. All right, and as we get to the bottom of page 153, I want to go over the figure 7-3 and talk about a muscle balance, or talk about, we'll say, correct movement patterns or movement efficiency, they call it. And specifically, if you have proper muscle balance, that leads to proper, I will say, the ability to contract each muscle effectively, which is normal or proper length tension relationships. Also force coupling relationships, meaning that each, since all the muscles are balanced, they all work together to perform efficient movement. And that leads to proper joint mechanics, meaning efficient, effective movement. And proper joint mechanics leads to the efficient force acceptance and generation, meaning your movement reactivity is going to be effective and proper. And then that also promotes joint stability and mobility, which leads to overall movement efficiency. So that's kind of the way that they refer to it. That's nothing necessarily that's going to make it onto the test, but just understanding that what it looks like when somebody has proper muscle balance, why that means that they're moving effectively. Okay, and you'll see further down the road what improper muscle balance, or that improper muscle balance leads to lack of length tension relationships and force coupling, and therefore improper joint mechanics, and therefore not proper joint mechanics, or force acceptance and generation, which leads to potential injury, muscle imbalance, etc. Go team! All right, let's move over to page 154, and let's talk about the planes of motion which you'll be looking, or the views of which you'll be looking at the static postural assessment. So the three views that you'll be looking for on a static postural assessment, remember this is just the standing assessment we went over previous, are going to be the frontal view, the frontal view from the back, or frontal view anterior, frontal view posterior, and then the sagittal view. Really quickly, guys, if you don't understand the planes of motion yet, this book really doesn't go over planes of motion too well, but let's quickly review them. Okay, frontal plane is going to be side-to-side movement. You definitely need to know that. I even want you to highlight frontal plane up at the top of page 154, and I want you to write down that it's side-to-side movement, something like a side lunge or like a lateral shuffle or a karaoke, if you guys know what that exercise is, or a lateral tube walking or lifting or abducting your arm out to the side. Those are all frontal plane movements, side-to-side movements, okay? I want you to know that. Sagittal plane is front-to-back movements, meaning lifting your arm forward, bending your elbow forward like a bicep curl. Running, squatting, walking, those are all sagittal plane. Those are moving front-to-back, okay? Definitely know that. Transverse plane is obviously rotation, okay? That's not listed on this page, but I want you to understand potential exercises associated with the frontal, sagittal, and transverse plane. Any rotation is the transverse plane. Any front to back, walking, running, squatting, flexion, extension exercises are going to be sagittal plane. And then frontal plane is any side to side movement. If it says, you know, a side raise or a side lunge or a lateral something, that's frontal plane movement. Definitely know that. All right, so now continuing with figure 7-4, the plumb line is what you're looking at as that white line that goes through this lady on page 154. And you want to, she's showing you effective posture or proper posture. The main one that I like to look at for this is going to be the sagittal view, or the side view, you can kind of call it, looking at... Oh yeah, okay. Well, sagittal view, she's facing to the left, which, yeah, you're kind of looking at her from the side. I'm not sure why they call it the sagittal view. Because, yeah, it divides the body into right and left halves, so you're kind of like imagining her cut in half from front to back right now. So, the side view, or the sagittal view, the main thing I use the static postural assessment for is going to check the shoulder alignment with the ear alignment. Okay, and if you notice, this lady has the shoulder, middle of her shoulder is lined up with her ear. Okay, that is effective, proper upper body posture. Most people do not have that. Quite a lot of people have the rounded shoulders and slightly forward head position, meaning that they might be putting a lot of stress on the muscles of the upper back. They might get neck tightness a bit, and maybe some headaches here and there are some of the symptoms of having rounded shoulders, forward head. But that's the main one that I use the static postural assessment for. It's hard, it's a little bit difficult to see the muscle imbalances from the frontal views. Maybe you might see the feet turn out for sure when you're looking there. But they also furthermore talk about the knees internally rotating and the feet kind of flattening. It's a little bit difficult to see. I like to do the movement assessments to determine that. But yeah, for the static assessment, I definitely like the rounded shoulders, forward head from the side view or sagittal view. All right, so plumb line instructions. You're just kind of looking at the where the plumb line runs through the body, you aren't going to have a line to in or when you're working with a client. One thing you can do is take a photo and add a line on your iPhone, on your Samsung, or on your Galaxy, or on your Google phone, or on your Motorola, or what else is making a comeback. but yeah, you can use your smartphone. There you go. To create a line to show someone that, oh, your shoulders are not in line with your ears, therefore you have a little bit of forward head posture or rounded shoulders posture. All right, go team. Moving over to page 155, and yeah, just kind of talking about the key concept. You want to really focus on the biggest postural imbalances. They say don't get too caught up in, like, let's say the ear. Like, to tell the truth, there's a minor muscle imbalance in this lady. The middle of her ear is where the shoulder should be running through. That line shows that her head is just slightly forward. That's back to figure 7-4. Don't focus on minute details. Focus on something major. Okay, you don't need to write something down if it's like slight, unless they are complaining of pain from it, obviously. So just keep that in mind. And then furthermore, talking about the plumb line instructions as we move down to the middle of page 155. Frontal views, yeah, it says good posture is going to, with the plumb line from the frontal views, is going to pass equidistant between the feet, ankle, and intersect the pubis, umbilicus, sternum, mandible. It basically goes through the middle of the body, straight from the top of the forehead, through the nose, through the middle of the lips, all the way through the middle of the chest, into the groin, all the way down to the floor in between the feet, okay? They're just describing it in these three, so you don't really need to go into that too much, but you know, where should it be? Sagittal views, facing sideways, and good posture. The main thing is, yes, it should pass from the AC joint, the knee, greater trochanter of the femur, meaning the side of the femur, the acromioclavicular AC joint, and then also AC joint and slightly anterior to the mastoid process of the temporal bone of the skull, or you could just say the earlobe. There you go. And then the transverse view, you don't really need to know the transverse view. So let's go ahead and skip on over to 156. All right, so as we look to page 156, you're kind of done with the plumb line, and we kind of move over to the they're basically giving you a chronological plan for the postural and movement screens here on page 156. And in my opinion, you guys are going to develop your own sort of process and order and sequence for doing all these, but here they're going to give you an example of that. And specifically, they're talking about performing the health history questionnaire, okay, lifestyle information. Then making sure that the if they need a medical release, you have to get that before you can do anything else. But then you typically go into a static postural assessment. Then you go from there. You can go into something like postural or identifying correctable postural compensations, administering the proper movement screens to further test those, and then you move into the phase training. If there's specific tight muscles, you can do muscle length testing, which we'll get into further in this chapter. And then you kind of get into phase 1, phase 2, phase 3, and 4. It's kind of silly to just assume you're straight from the postural assessment you're going to go into those three phases, but that means over many months, most likely. All right, so as we get to the bottom of page 156, we're going to talk about the certain deviations that you might see in the static postural assessment a little bit further. And I typically see most of these in the movement screens, but they're going to bring them up right now, so let's go ahead and talk about them. So the first one that they're going to talk about is going to be the ankle pronation and supination and the effect on femoral rotation. Really, the only thing that you need to know for this is ankle pronation leads to internal knee rotation. And it's also called, eversion or pronation of the foot, the foot collapsing. That's what you're mainly looking for. I've almost never seen someone with femoral external rotation and foot supination. It just doesn't happen because the kinetic chain likes to fall in on itself and not typically fall outwards because it's not too practical. But furthermore, Looking over to the pictures in figure 7-6, pronation and supination and the effects on the kinetic chain. Neutral subtalar joint. So what is the subtalar joint, guys? It's the ankle. But specifically the part of the ankle that can move in the frontal plane and evert and invert. Eversion is where the foot, we'll say, sort of the bottom of the foot moves laterally. And the inversion is where the bottom of the foot moves medially, if that kind of made sense. But neutral subtalar joint position and neutral knee alignment is proper. And you'll see that the toes, middle of the, or the second and third toe, line up with the middle of the knee, and that goes straight up through the body to the basically the head of the femur. And you can kind of see that in table 7-4, or sorry, figure 7-6. And that's proper and effective. That middle toe, second and third toe to the middle of the knee, up through the middle of the leg. So pronation and internal knee rotation is the main one you're looking for. What happens is when the foot kind of starts to evert, eversion or pronate, meaning it foot flattens, and I want you to highlight that, the foot is flattening or foot is collapsing inward, the knee is going to rotate inward and cause stress on the knee joint and the entire kinetic chain. Okay? excuse me. That is bad. You don't want that. That's going to cause potential back issues. It's going to cause knee pain, increased risk for ACL tears, and potentially put a lot of stress on the MCL as well. You don't want that, and that's something that you definitely want to address. Let's continue at... supination of the foot doesn't happen almost ever, but the knees point outward. And it's something that you should just be aware of just in case. But typically, the pronation and internal knee rotation is what you're looking for. And that's what we're going to highlight as we get into table 7-4. Subtalar joint pronation. Subtalar joint movement, that is pronation. Foot movement is eversion. And that means that the foot is collapsing inward. I want you to highlight that. That can be asked on the test. So it might say something like, when the foot... everts, it's also known as something like foot collapses inward or subtalar joint movement that is associated with internal knee rotation is eversion or the foot collapsing inward. Okay, so keep that up or keep that in mind. That's going to be important to know for the test. And also, in my opinion, very important for the field, even though you'll probably see this more in the movement screens and less in the static screens. But once you get really good, you'll be able to recognize stuff like that. Meaning, a year more of practice and looking at people's posture. All right. So let's really quickly go over the structure of the lower limb, the leg. Page 157, figure 7-7. You have the gastrocnemius. The gastrocnemius is the big muscle in the back of the leg. That's your calf muscle. But calf is actually grouped into the soleus and the gastroc. But I want you guys to know those as two different muscles because the gastrocnemius crosses the knee joint and is effectively stretched when the knee is straight. The soleus runs underneath the gastrocnemius and does not cross the knee. Therefore, when you bend the knee and do a calf stretch, that's stretching the soleus. When you straighten the knee and doing a calf stretch, that's getting the gastrocnemius. The soleus is more commonly tight, in my opinion, than the gastroc, but they're both considered overactive and need to be addressed. But that means that when you address someone's tight calves, you have to do a bent knee calf stretch and a straight leg calf stretch. Majorly important there because a lot of times people only focus on the straight leg one and they miss stretching the soleus effectively. And that can mean that the postural imbalances that are affected by those tight muscles continue on without being fixed. Foam roll, both of those, stretch those. It's very important. Most people have tight calves. 80% of my clients have had tight calves, and we work on those immediately because you're walking all day long. And okay. But that's the structure of the back of the leg there. Also, guys, the calcaneus, that's the back, or that's your heel bone, and the Achilles tendon. All the soleus and the gastroc attach to that, and then attach that Achilles tendon, and the Achilles tendon inserts into the top of the calcaneus bone. Okay. And then I guess right next to that picture, it says a tight gastroc, nemius, and soleus or may force the calcaneal eversion. Okay, so the calves are tight when eversion or pronation. So guys, eversion and pronation are the exact same thing of the foot. Okay, if I didn't say that already. But tight calves can cause eversion, and that's important to stretch to correct that pronation eversion. It's called pronation distortion syndrome. They don't call it that in this book, but yes. All right, moving over to page 158, we're going to get into hip abduction, adduction. So basically, this is just when the hip is elevated on one side compared to the other side. It's really, really, really difficult for you as a personal trainer to see this. Okay. I've never done this assessment because it's you would literally need to mark the dots on someone's back and then measure that through or at the top of their iliac crest, their posterior iliac crest, mark those two dots and then have them, you know, stand in static posture and then take a ruler or a straight edge and then see if they're level to the floor or not, parallel to the floor. Most of the time, people do have some version of this. It may be severe, it may not be severe. Even I, because typically when people stand, they don't stand on both feet perfectly balanced. They lean on one side, and that causes typically pelvic upward rotation or adduction, and causes a little bit of an imbalance, meaning one side of the core might be tight compared to the other. The way that I address this is stretch the core frequently, and that can assist with balance. Also, guys, chiropractors can really be effective when fixing this sort of thing. If people constantly have tightness on one side of their back, typically this is the issue. And if you're sitting right now and you have tightness in one side of your back, you probably have this hip imbalance. Hard to fix, but use a foam roll, see a chiropractor, stretch the muscles on the tight side. You'll know when you do like a side lift in your core, you can probably tell that one side is a little bit tighter than the other. So lying on your side, kind of push up with your hand and stretch each side and see what feels good. But yeah, address that also with like a softball or a lacrosse ball to really get deep in that tissue. It's important. And guys, 80% of the world, we'll say 80% of the nation, has low back pain. And a lot of times it's caused by a simple deviation like this, but it's really hard to diagnose. So address the low back by taking a foam roll to it and taking a lacrosse ball, getting a little bit deeper into that tissue, and then stretching both sides of the core. And also mainly the hip flexors hamstring combo is important for that balance as well. That's a very, very, very simple view and approach to addressing low back pain, but it does get a lot more detailed because, you know, sometimes you may still have low back pain after doing that constantly. But okay. All right, deviation 3, pelvic tilting, anterior or posterior. The main one I want you guys to know for sure is anterior pelvic tilting and what that is caused by. Specifically, it's caused by tight hip flexors and a tight erector spinae. I want you to highlight that. That's at the bottom of page 159 under the apply what you know box. Highlight that first sentence. They talk about 7-13 and it's on the next page, but the anterior pelvic tilting is the extremely, extremely common. A little bit more common in females, but it's something that can cause low back pain and stress on the vertebrae as well as all sorts of issues, knee pain, hip pain, low back pain. So addressing that by stretching the hip flexors is going to be important. Figure 7-9 over on page 158 here, you'll see the muscles that attach to the hip. These are going to be the anterior muscular of the hip and knee, but specifically you have to see the main hip flexors. The hip flexors are going to be the psoas minor, psoas major, iliacus a little to a lesser degree, but it does definitely still do that, and the TFL or tensor fascia lata and the rectus femoris. Okay, those are all considered hip flexors and need to be stretched when you have an anterior pelvic tilt. In my opinion, those need to be stretched on every single person because our society sits down so frequently that those muscles shorten and cause back pain. If people sit and ever have back pain from sitting, it's 100% because they have tight hip flexors. And it also typically means that they sit quite frequently. Or potentially they hurt their back in a sport, and that might be an issue too. But always, always, always stretch the rectus femoris, tensor fasciae latae, psoas muscle group, which is a kneeling hip flexor stretch. Look that up. Or one that I've done more recently that's really, really helped alleviate low back pain with my tight hip flexors is taking a softball and addressing the psoas muscle group by placing it just to the side of my rectus abdominis, above my iliac crest and in between my ribs, and lying on that to get deep tissue work done on the psoas muscle group. Okay, because the psoas is really, really deep. It's almost as deep as the spine. It attaches from the front of the hip all the way up to the lumbar spine. So a softball gets deep in there, lying face down on that softball in the side of your abdomen. Okay, really, really, really important. At least for me, to effectively stretch the psoas, because it's hard to get a psoas stretch in without putting pressure on that abdomen right there, because it's such a deep muscle. But yes, hip flexors need to be stretched for the anterior pelvic tilt. That is a test question almost always, and I want you guys to know that. So they also talk about the posterior pelvic tilt. We can kind of get an idea of what they're referring to on page 159 with the bucket. A neutral pelvis has the bucket parallel to the ground, in the sense that no water is spilling out the front or back. An anterior pelvic tilt is when the lumbar spine arches and the pelvis rotates anteriorly, and the water is spilling out the front. That is more common in females, like I mentioned, specifically because commonly if you wear high heels, that puts the pelvis in an anteriorly rotated position. And that's dumping the water out the front of the bucket. Posterior pelvic tilt, doesn't happen as much, but I've seen it for sure. Definitely from sitting a lot, like sitting all day, every day. The water is spilling out the back of the bucket. You can kind of get an idea of the pelvic positioning by looking at the red dots below those bucket pictures, and see the neutral pelvic position is vertical, the anterior pelvic position is facing forward, or the line is heading forward, and the posterior pelvic position, that line is kind of heading backwards. All right, hopefully that explained that enough. Anything I missed? Yeah, that should be good for you guys to hopefully understand the anterior pelvic tilt and what you need to know around the test and in the field for that. You'll see an arch in the low back when you're diagnosing this. Or sorry, I guess I shouldn't use the word diagnose. When you're assessing this, you'll see an arch in the low back, and their butt's going to kind of stick out a little bit more. That's what you're looking for to see an anterior pelvic tilt. And what muscles are you going to stretch? You guys know, the hip flexors. Good. What are the two hip flexors, guys? Psoas group, rectus femoris. That might be another test question right there. All right. Moving over to page 160, figure 7-13. You guys need to highlight this table 7-6, specifically muscles that are suspected to be tight for the anterior pelvic tilt. What muscles? Definitely highlight the hip flexors and erector spinae as well. The erector spinae, guys, is going to be the... all of the muscles that extend the spine, the longissimus, the spinalis, and the intercostalis, those three make up the erector spinae and arch the back. Okay, they assist with spinal extension, lumbar extension, as well as thoracic extension. That also attributes to that, but mainly I would say the hip flexors are going to be what you need to know and what you need to stretch. To address the tight erector spinae, you would need to use a foam roll or a ball of some sort, lacrosse ball, peanut ball, that's two tennis balls taped together, or they make those for sale by two, a rubber ball with a bridge, and or a softball, something like that, a medicine ball. Just address that by, it's hard to stretch the erector spinae, maybe a rotational stretch can help, but I really like to get deep in there with a ball of some sort. All right, so that's what you need to know regarding those. They may call that anterior pelvic tilt lower crossed syndrome or lower cross syndrome. That's definitely something that you'll hear in the field, is the anterior pelvic tilt being called lower cross syndrome. And then upper cross syndrome, which we're going to get into next, is that rounded shoulders forward head position, which is deviation number 4. The rounded shoulders forward head, we kind of talked about that. Okay, so that's kind of done with the anterior pelvic tilt. Let's move to the bottom of page 160 and talk about the shoulder position and the thoracic spine. All right, so remember, the thoracic spine, we learned about kyphosis already. Kyphosis is the rounding of the upper back. And the shoulder position is affected based on the muscles that are tight and weak around the upper body. Okay, so looking to figure 7-14, these are all the scapular movements. Not too many of them show up on the test. I do want you to understand what we'll say protraction or abduction is, because that is associated with kyphosis and or with the rounded shoulder position. Abduction or protraction. In the field, I think most people will call it protraction of the shoulder blades. Where you're rounding the shoulders forward, that's protraction. That's in, figure 7-4 right there in the bottom left. But elevation, raising the shoulder blades, depression, lowering the shoulder blades, depressing the shoulder blades. Adduction or retraction, that's squeezing the shoulder blades backward. That is effective upper body posture. You want the shoulder blades retracted for good posture. And I'm sure you know that right now. You're probably sitting with rounded positioning while you're sitting down right now. You can retract your shoulder blades, squeeze them together, and that's going to be more effective posture. And every grandma, it seems like, says, hey, sit upright, or grandpa maybe, but improve your posture, sit upright. Okay. That's what they refer to. Upward rotation, guys, is going to be when you lift your arms overhead and the shoulder blade kind of, we'll say, rotates, or the spine, the bottom of the shoulder blade rotates upward. Downward rotation is when you lower the arms and the spine of the shoulder blades return to normal position, or downward. All right, figure 7-15, that's just looking at some of the muscles around or that attach to the shoulder blade. And specifically referring to the structural components of the shoulder blade, the medial border, the inferior angle of the scapula, and the glenoid fossa, that's the shoulder, and the head of the humerus. Those are kind of just pointing right there. And that's going to be the normal position of the scapula, is in, we'll call it neutral position, but they're retracted and depressed. That's effective posture. Scapular winging and scapular protraction does come up in the field a little bit. Scapular winging is when the shoulder blades kind of lift off the rib cage, and the muscles can't really hold it to the rib cage to promote optimal stability. So you'll see scapular winging, we'll say, when you see like a space in between the shoulder blade and the rib cage. Okay, I'm sure you had that friend in elementary school that can pop out a shoulder blade really far by like putting his arm behind his back and kind of like popping a shoulder blade off his rib cage. That friend is doing an example of scapular winging. Okay, and you might see this when somebody gets into a push-up position and their shoulder blades lift off their rib cage. That's the way that you assess it, and that's the way you typically see it. Scapular protraction, remember we talked about that, and that's typically what shows up on the test. Scapular protraction is when the shoulder or the shoulders round forward, or the shoulder blades move further apart. Protraction. You'll see that in a static postural assessment because they're just standing and their shoulders are slightly rounded. Okay. Moving over to page 162, we're going to get a little bit better view of scapular protraction. Also, guys, there's going to be a lot to highlight here because scapular protraction is one of the most common muscle imbalances that you will see in the field, and therefore ACE wants to ask you about it on the test. Okay, scapular protraction, you'll see the lady, figure 7-17, 717, that's protraction. Her shoulders are rounded and kind of elevated. You can tell that this lady does not naturally have scapular protraction. So it's kind of, it looks a little funny, but scapular protraction is where the shoulders are just rounded forward. And you can probably do that right now by trying to touch your shoulder blades together, in the front. That's what scapular protraction is. And, the palms, notice her palms, guys, are facing backwards. They're kind of facing towards her thighs. If her hands were at her sides, her palms would be facing towards her back or posteriorly. Keep that in mind. That's what happens when you have scapular protraction. All right. So you need to recognize the scapular movements and their planes of motion a little bit as well. One thing that can be asked on the test is when one shoulder is elevated and the other is not. Okay, what does that mean? It basically means that one side of the, like, let's say someone plays tennis or volleyball and they swing really hard all the time with their right arm. That's going to cause more development of that side of the body in the arm. And specifically, that might mean their right shoulder or left shoulder, whichever is their dominant hand, is going to be elevated, potentially, tighter. Okay, I actually used to have this. I played volleyball a lot growing up, and when I swing, you know, nonstop for, you know, weeks on end, especially in the summer playing beach volleyball, the muscles of my right shoulder would hypertrophy and get stronger, but that means that they would also get a little bit tighter if I wasn't stretching, and my right shoulder is slightly elevated compared to my left, and that is in the frontal plane. That movement compensation is in the frontal plane, meaning that my right shoulder is elevated, and that's in the frontal plane. Okay, just to be clear, that's can potentially be a test question in the sense that what plane of motion is shoulder elevation, or what plane of motion is a imbalance of having one shoulder higher than the other, things like that. Okay, I want you to write that down, kind of next to that scapular protraction area. So what can you do to fix scapular protraction? Let's actually talk about that after. Let's talk about that after we look at table 7-7, the shoulder position. So if the shoulders are not level, highlight what muscles are tight: upper trapezius, levator, scapulae, rhomboids. I guess rhomboids. I never consider the rhomboids tight, but okay, if they put it, whatever. But what plane of motion, what plane of view or plane of motion is that in? If the shoulders are not level, that's in the frontal plane of motion. Highlight that. Shoulders not level, frontal plane. Then you have the protracted shoulders, and that's also kind of in the frontal plane. Or well, they say sagittal is the view that you do it, but is a frontal plane, deviation. You don't need to know that, so I don't even know why I brought that up. But what muscles are tight? I want you guys to know this. The anterior scapulohumeral muscles, such as the anterior deltoid, pectoralis major, or all the pectorals in general are tight when it's protracted. I want you to add that to there, as well as the upper trapezius. And serratus anterior is usually tight with scapular protraction and lengthened with scapular winging. But what is weak when you have protracted shoulders? It's you have weak rhomboids. Okay, so the rhomboids are weak when you have a protracted shoulder blade. I want you to write that in. So it only brings up the tight ones, but it also asks on the test what is weak with scapular protraction. That is the rhomboids. Write that in, highlight that. What muscles are tight during protraction, and then add that rhomboids are weak during protraction. That can be a test question as well. So shoulder elevation, once again, is a frontal plane deviation. When you have a right shoulder elevation, you can also have like a right head tilt, okay, or like the head is going to shift slightly laterally. That is also in the frontal plane and can be caused, once again, by someone having an overactive one side. I typically see that in athletes, or it also can be from someone sleeping on one side, or sleeping on their side, and specifically one side for their entire life, and not mixing up their sleeping positions. Their head can tilt slightly to the right or to the left. That's also in the frontal plane. And, that upper trapezius is and levator scapulae are going to be the ones that you need to address on that side, the tight side. All right, so a lot of questions kind of come from that scapular protraction. Why? Because it's one of the most common things that you'll see in the field, and you need to learn how to address it. What muscles do you stretch for scapular protraction? Definitely the pectoralis major, the latissimus dorsi, the anterior deltoid. I even say the biceps as well, because that crosses the shoulder joint and attaches to the shoulder blade, or to the acromion process. Upper trapezius, levator scapulae, definitely stretch as well. And then strengthen, guys. This is also going to be a test question. You need to strengthen the rhomboids, strengthen the middle trapezius. When someone is protracted, in a protracted state, you need to also strengthen the muscles that are weak, that are posterior, okay, on your back. Your upper middle back, pretty much on everyone, needs to be strengthened because we constantly sit or we constantly hunch, and that's going to lengthen those muscles, okay? So give me an exercise that's going to fix or focus on scapular retraction. One of my favorites is going to be what are called wall angels. That's where you are line your back up on a wall, your head as well, and you externally rotate your hands and try to go up or up as high as you can and down as far as you can with your hands still on the wall. You can probably YouTube that, and they should hopefully have wall angels. They may call it something, yeah, external rotation on a wall, that sort of thing. Also, guys, I love to do the a reverse fly on the floor. In the sense that you're face down, forehead on the ground, chest on the ground, and your arms are at a T, and you're going to squeeze the shoulder blades off by lifting your hands as high as you can posteriorly. Okay, so it's in order to fix scapular protraction, you want to strengthen the upper middle back, the rhomboids and middle lower traps, and one of the great ways to do that is with a reverse fly on the floor. Okay, write that down. Reverse fly on the floor is a great way to fix scapular protraction. And specifically, like holding or isometrically holding that reverse fly can really be effective in fatiguing those muscles and strengthening those muscles to prevent that protraction. Man, it feels like I spent 10, 15 minutes right on that one by itself, but a lot of questions can be pulled from this table 7-7, those pictures there, as well as just scapular protraction in general and shoulder positioning and of the thoracic spine, that sort of thing. So, if you didn't get all that, maybe listen to that one more time, go back 10 minutes, kind of pull that up as that is very important. Let's move along to the head position as that can have a question or two on the test as well. And also, once again, forward head position is mainly what you're looking for. There's no one that has too far back head position or backward head position. But forward head position is very commonly associated with scapular protraction, and it's called upper cross syndrome and or rounded shoulders forward head. So, what are you looking at? Remember, in the plumb line, the plumb line should be going right through the middle of the shoulder. If you look at figure 7-18, good posture, the shoulder goes right through that ear, okay? Right through the middle of that ear. That is a proper head positioning, good posture, okay? What plane of motion is that deviation? So when your head juts forward and or goes backwards, that's called cervical flexion and cervical extension. That is in the sagittal plane. I want you to know that. Table 7-8, the observation of the forward head position. That forward head position is a deviation in the sagittal plane of motion. Okay, head juts forward, head goes backward. Guys, there's about 5 to 8 questions on the test regarding the planes of motion. So if you aren't too familiar with it, just look up planes of motion on YouTube, and there's probably a great video for you to further understand that. Hopefully, I've been able to help you understand it a little bit further. But yeah, forward head, backward, forward and backward movements is in the sagittal plane. You need to know that for the test. It's very common. Some of the tests has some video questions. You may need to determine postural imbalances by looking at someone in a video with scapular protraction or with forward head position. And that can be you want to understand what each postural deviation looks like. Okay, so forward head position, use those pictures to determine that if it does show up in a video question. It's pretty cool. They have video questions on the test. I really, really like that element to this particular test. I think it's good for you to be able to recognize the imbalances by looking at someone doing it. That's very, very important. All right, so forward head, what's going to be tight? I think this is important for you to understand in the field. cervical and spine extensors, the upper trapezius and levator scapulae. So when somebody has a forward head position, I do all the neck stretches in the sense of pulling your head forward, okay, forward and to the side slightly to stretch your levator scapulae and upper trapezius, tilting your head to the side, laterally moving your head to the side to stretch your upper trapezius on whatever side that you're leaning. And then also, guys, your sternocleidomastoid, that's the one that attaches to your collarbone right down there and goes up the right next to your throat. It's kind of a thicker muscle. That one needs to be stretched as well with the forward head position. And you kind of look up and away, up and to the side. So you're looking up and then you look kind of, as I do it, you guys can't see, but look up and to the right, up and to the left. You'll feel the front of the neck stretch. That's the sternocleidomastoid. That's really, really important for forward head position to stretch as well. Also take two fingers, massage that. I'm sure if you pressed on that right now, you can find some tightness and may even shoot a little tingle into your face because the muscles or the nerves go from this out of the cervical spine, actually sometimes out of the thoracic spine into your sternocleidomastoid and up into your face. So go team. All right, postural assessment checklists and worksheets. All right, so for those postural assessments that you just did, these are all these static assessments, you're going to have a sheet. Typically, the gym that you work at is going to provide these sort of things, but if they don't, once again, you can go to acefitness.org/PT resources and download these assessment forms. Page 164, you can check these off, okay? I typically just write them down. I look for everything and write them down. In the beginning when working as a personal trainer, you may not know everyone that you're supposed to be checking. So having a sheet like this in front of you can be good to make sure you're checking everything. Also, guys, you don't want to make this a really long, intensive process. You want to make sure that you're just kind of buzzing through it. In the sense of let's look at you from the lateral view. Let's look at you from the front or from the front. Let's look at you from the back. Here's the issues that you have. Boom. Just really quick to the point that makes you look extremely professional. If you're like looking at a piece of paper and then looking at the person, then looking at a piece of paper and then looking at the person and doing this over and over and over for 10, 15 minutes, that's less professional. Doesn't make you look as qualified. So, or it could do the opposite effect. It could potentially have, the person's like, oh, wow, this person really knows what they're doing because they're really focusing on this. Maybe. Kind of depends, but you can pull it off either way. Got to have an open mind when I give these lectures. Can't be one-sided. But so frontal view, posterior view, sagittal view, all views, front, back, and to the side, anterior view, posterior view, lateral view. That's the way that I refer to it. And that's the checklist that you're going to go for. Then page 165, you figure 7-21, what can you write down or mark that the person has? Okay. Circle or mark the observed deviations. Okay. You can use that as well. That one's a little less, I don't like that one as much, but, you want to know what you're looking for. So, check marks are good. And then as you get into page 166, you have a lateral view of the side view, sagittal view, they say, of the exact same thing. Okay? So we're going to take a break right now because we've been at it an hour. I hit that really hard, guys. I haven't mentioned yet, but I should have mentioned this right in the beginning of the chapter. This chapter is probably the most, the chapter with the most test questions from it. Almost 20 test questions come from this chapter, and that's really important because you as a personal trainer need to understand the assessments probably the most because that's the way that you're going to create effective programs is understanding each person's improper or proper movements. Okay. Almost 20 questions in this chapter. That's why we went over, each one of those movements, pronation, anterior pelvic tilt are the main two, and hip flexors are tight in that. Anything that I told you to highlight prior, that we've already gone through maybe 10 to 12 test questions, and we're only halfway through this chapter. Actually, even less than halfway through this chapter. So we're next in the next bar, sound bar down below. We're going to get into movement screens. Let's go ahead and take a small break, and I will see you in movement screens in just about, whenever you want. That's a great thing. You can listen to it whenever you want. All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.